today, joining us all the way from over in Poland, is Dorota Robel. Dorota is the Chief R&D Officer at G2A. G2A is one of the world's largest and most trusted marketplaces for games, DLCs, game items, as well as software and e-learning. She's been in e-commerce for over 9 years. She's a big advocate for women in tech, and she believes the best work comes from diverse teams with interdisciplinary backgrounds. In addition, when she has some free time, she's a cycling enthusiast and likes documentaries. So, Dorota, thank you for joining us today.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for the invitation. Glad to be here today.
So, you know, we one of the things our listeners always like to start out with is the origin story. Like, how did you get into this, you know, world of gaming and tech? If you don't mind giving us a little bit about your background.
Sure, with pleasure. When I graduated actually in international relations from the University of Rome, I was looking for a job where I could use my knowledge of languages, English, Italian, and Polish. I was a gamer, but more a casual type than a regular gamer. And my recruiter told me about G2A. And you know what? I decided to leave Italy and return to Poland. So back then, G2A was an online shop for gamers, and I started as a business development specialist.
Okay.
Within a year, I became responsible for more and more markets. And in 2014, G2A changed its business model to a two-sided marketplace from a website shop.
Okay.
It was a time when I was promoted to the head of the marketplace, as many of my ideas had a positive impact on our business. And let's say that many of my observations and suggestions turned into an effective business solution in the end. And today, as you said, G2A is the world's largest marketplace for digital entertainment, and I am right now responsible for the entire platform and R&D area as a chief R&D officer.
So
that's the story.
That's a wonderful story. Now, you know, what were some of your insights that we might take as obvious today, but were not obvious when you came up with the ideas in business development?
I think that the idea that I had to listen to the customer's needs in the first place and to make sure that they have got the variety of the offerings as wider as possible. Because at the beginning, we were treating only few products and then, you know, expanding into much wider product portfolio. The second one was about developing new markets, because we started in Poland. We have quite big success in Poland. And then we decided, let's try another market within Europe. Once we were at a good level, let's say, of brand awareness of G2A platform in Europe, we decided to go outside Europe, in the US. And we were also exploring some Asian countries, African countries, Latin countries. And that was quite interesting experience. I must say that I was also registered in every marketplace in the world, let's say, to see how it is working from the backstage as a seller. So I was, you know, trying to sell video games on Taobao, Lazada, Amazon, eBay, everywhere. And this experience gave me actually the background, what we can do better, what we can totally, you know, cancel, because it's not related to the digital environment. And this is how we were improving G2A platform. And today, G2A is treating more than 75,000 products with 30 million customers that trusted us.
Wow, that's a huge number. 30 million are on your platform on a regular basis making purchases. I have to ask you, I know we have some questions here, but I'm going to deviate a little bit because you told a little, some really good story here. When you're trying to sell to different cultures, what have you noticed? Is there, from the people who are buying games, is it relatively similar, or do you have to change your tactics of how you sell based on the culture that you're trying to sell to, like the US and Europe?
It was totally different from country to country. We observed that certain countries are more interested in sport games, like FIFA or Football Manager or Pro Evolution Soccer, right?
Okay.
The others are more into the shooters, like Counter-Strike, right? Portal 2 or others. So we are trying to adjust to those preferences of the customers. And from the other point of view, we were also trying to adjust payment methods because what we discovered is that in different countries, they are different popularity of different methods. Not everywhere, let's say PayPal or credit cards are so popular. Sometimes in different countries, we have got alternative payment methods that are much more popular. And my biggest surprise was when we were trying to enter in India, that they were focused on cash on delivery, which was for digital products something, you know, totally new. So those kind of experiences across the globe gave us, let's say, a lot of experience, a lot of insights. And right now we can recommend the best, in my opinion, gaming experience to everyone, not only to the hardcore gamers, but also to the casual ones. Also for people who never treated gaming as a, you know, pastime, right? As a moment when they can spend their free time. And after post-pandemic world, I think that more and more people, they tried gaming and they decided to go through this type of entertainment. And here we are with our recommendations and with our mission, actually, to democratize digital entertainment, because our mission is to provide the best digital experience adventure to everyone, you know, without looking at the gender, at the age, at the religion, etc. So this is what G2A is and how we treat our customers.
That's a big, big project, because you have such a diversity of customers, such a diversity of cultures. And to service all of them is absolutely not a minor undertaking. That's stating the obvious. But now, how, you know, being a cybersecurity show, I guess this, what you guys have built, there are a lot of cybersecurity concerns with it, right? You have a lot of data, you have a lot of different audiences. I guess let's just systematically go through and get some of your ideas on how do you, first of all, secure these folks from getting their identities stolen, or they're getting compromised, or their data gets stolen out of the system. I'm sure you guys have thought about that quite a bit.
Yes, actually, when replying to your question, I would focus on a few things. The first one is that we support a wide range of payment methods, as I said, including popular global options, such as card, PayPal, Google Pay, Apple Pay, of course, as well as numerous local methods like Venmo, Blik, Ideal, Pix, so forth. And we are constantly expanding our payment offerings to better serve our customers. And we are excited to continue growing and evolving alongside the changing needs of this payment industry. And what is important is that G2A actively identify changing payments environments in terms of legislation, payment methods, share innovative payments, acquires technological advancements. And in the same time, it combines with possibilities offered to the market and sellers' requirements, because we are a two-sided marketplace, for quick settlement and high success rate of the transactions. And this is, let's say, from the customer point of view.
Okay.
The second aspect is about cybersecurity, as you mentioned. We can see that cybercrime is currently on the rise.
Yeah.
And we are working hard to stay ahead of it, ensuring of security protocols are above industry standards. And security was, is, and always be one of our top priorities. And we are proud to have created a safe environment for everyone on G2A.com, because we hope to see more companies prioritizing security. We see that this is not really popular right now, and I think that more and more companies, especially small and medium size, they will see that they have invest into security much more than they are doing nowadays. And of course, there is no marketplace in the world with no attempt to fraud. But our comprehensive approach to security allowed us actually to keep the anti-fraud rate much lower than our level that are, let's say, medium industry average, right? So this is also a big achievement, especially you have to consider that we are treating only digital products with instant delivery. So there is no physical stuff that can be delivered by couriers on our marketplace. And we are protecting our marketplace also by cutting edge AI-supported security systems.
Oh, really?
Yes, like SentinelOne, Qualys, or SonarQube.
Okay.
And we are very enthusiastic about AI that helps businesses, and no doubt it does, right? But I would like to point out also one aspect here. AI actually is a double-edged sword, providing opportunities from one side, but also new threats. Because monitoring, analyzing patterns of user behavior, here they are. AI is helping, predicting the outcomes of unusual behavior, preventing fraudulent activity and its outcomes, of course, training and machine learning for future use. However, cybercriminals often use AI for their own purposes.
Of course.
Including, you know, creating new malware and hacking tools, automating really in a good way, let's say, phishing attacks. AI can be tricked by those who study and test its vulnerabilities by crafting data, communications, or events that fool the system. And also AI algorithms are susceptible to human error or oversight. So this is, let's say, a two-sided thing of using AI from, you know, protecting, from one side protecting business, and for the other side, trying to find out how these tools are used also by the criminals.
So,
and the third point, I would say, is about our sellers.
Yeah.
Because as I said, we are two-sided marketplace. We have that from one side customers, for the other side merchants. So at G2A, we really, you know, pay attention on how we verify the sellers. And at G2A, you can pass the verification process only if you are a business verified seller. We do not allow any individual sellers to sell because we believe that they cannot, let's say, treat the customer service in the way that we would like to. So that's why only business sellers are allowed to sell on G2A.com. So when registering and onboarding sellers process is really complicated if I compare it to the other marketplaces like Amazon, eBay, Allegro, Taobao, because we are asking sellers to provide really, you know, many documents like certificate of registration, legal documents, ownership certificates, and many others. So we really pay attention on the qualified merchants, and this is also resulting into really low refund rate on our marketplace, because this is like less than 1% from total transactions.
Wow, that's very low. For the size of the
incredibly,
market.
Yeah, incredibly low, right? But let's say that focusing on the seller's verification just pay off, right? Because then you will see that this, let's say, this customer service to the customers is on the higher level than if you will be allowing anyone, let's say, to sell on marketplace. And we are also partnering with different external partners. I can name a few, let's say.
Yeah,
Because I think it's important, you know, to cooperate with others and to find out, let's say, and check the tools and companies that they can help you out with protecting your business. And JUST is using machine learning to properly handle any disputes or chargebacks that are raised against us. And this is a company that is helping us a lot. And after implementing this solution, we had a 30 percent point increase in win rate.
Wow.
For reversing chargebacks, which is not only great success in terms of KPI itself, but also a great place for sharing knowledge with others that are seeing also cases, behaviors, or other merchants, right? And I just mentioned that before, but I would tell it again because I think it's extremely important. Please. And I really appreciate that we have got programs, podcasts, interviews like this one, because my observation is that a post-pandemic world, there have been quite a lot of new internet users.
Yes, very much so.
who are completely unaware of how they should protect themselves on the internet. So that is why we see a need of working on changing that and helping, you know, with education, trying to give them an idea and also, you know, some tips and tricks how to protect themselves from threats.
Let's go there then. In terms of some tips and tricks for your user base, share some ideas on how they can be safer.
Yeah, let's say that when customers are scanning, you know, sometimes it's happening that the customer is sharing credit card data with our customer support.
Okay.
Which is, you know, it's not safe, right, to do so. So we are trying to educate them that you shouldn't do that, right? Because this, and this one. So the same with using social media. We see that people are sharing, you know, different things without too much care of what they are sharing. And then you can be easily, you know, attacked by some bad actors within the internet, that they can steal, let's say, your data, they can steal your credit card, etc. So we are trying to give them, let's say, tips how to be protected. And internally, we have got also security trainings for our staff to not be actually vulnerable to the phishing attacks, to wisely share the data with everyone in the company, but also outside. We are trying to focus on this human firewall, and we are giving also people, you know, the badges if you are a good protector of those tips and tricks or not.
So you're establishing a culture of cybersecurity inside your environment. That's admirable. Very few companies actually take that challenge very seriously. And that is actually one of the most effective ways we have seen to cut back on bad actors compromising people. As if there's a lot of things that can be prevented by addressing human behavior.
Yeah, indeed. I totally agree.
You know, and so let me ask you about regulation, because you guys are in Europe, you're in the United States, California, I assume. So has the CCPA and GDPR, have they been a good thing for you for e-commerce and security, or does it not affect it, or has it been a bad thing? What are your thoughts there, Dura?
From the business perspective, I think that they are good thing, right? But for the customer perspective, sometimes they are bad thing, because people do not understand correctly what that means, and what we observe, sometimes they are not reading about things. However, we are always compliant with every regulation, and in every country we were compliant with even local regulations. So this is our priority, to be compliant with everything that is required. In terms of not only, you know, e-commerce business, but also from the payment perspective, we are audited by 200 payment methods every month, you know, because they are our partners. So we have to adjust to the requirements, to the card schemes, etc. And in here, I think we are quite good in terms of implementing that always on time, always at the best level, so the customer can easily buy without suffering too much, let's say, from the process, to making sure that the process is quick, but it's also compliant in terms of regulations and requirements from different points of view, not only payments, but also, you know, general e-commerce directives.
Going back to AI, how do you see AI transforming G2A in terms of your e-commerce? How do you think it's going to impact? What's your vision for the future with that?
In terms of AI, I think that it definitely helps to automate the process, let's say, in terms of some customers' compliance, or always the same questions or something like that. In the fields that are, let's say, a regular field where similar questions happens often, but I don't believe that AI is resolving every problem in terms of security. I wouldn't bet only on AI. I still think that this human touch is necessary, because, you know, machine learning is machine learning, right? Yeah. So, and where the threats are coming very often is about emotions. You know, criminals, sometimes they are caught because they were too greedy, or they, yes, something happened, you know, and this is not anomaly. This is about emotions. And in that field, I think that the human touch is very important. So that's why on the cybersecurity side at G2A, we have got AI tools, but we have got also a cyber defense team, which is prepared, analyzing, monitoring, and trying to find out the rationale about, you know, what is, let's say, in cyber criminal minds, in order to be ahead of them.
Dorada, you know, you are the only person that has appeared on this show that has actually talked or mentioned that you're trying to understand the psychology of the bad actor. And that, my hat's off to you for that. That's, I was not expecting that. And because it's a deficient area that we often point out, is that if you're going to defend against something, you have to get into the mind of what that thing is, or that person is, to understand what their need is, what their desire is, why they're doing what they're doing.
So, and what would be the next step?
What would be the next step? And we see, and that's, we term that proactive defense. Very few companies. In fact, you're almost in almost over 150 people on the as guests. You're probably the first company that's mentioned that as a focus in their cybersecurity program. So that's admirable. I mean, whoever engineered that is thinking along the right tracks. Because without it,
thank you.
Yeah, you without it, it's a very difficult. In fact, most people, you mentioned human touch, and I want our audience to make sure that we highlight that, because most of the industry in the cybersecurity world is throwing technology and automation at the problem, and unless you put the human touch in, both on the cybersecurity defense side and on the people behavior side, you're not going to get a very effective outcome. That's been our experience, at least.
Yeah, and even, you know, when choosing, let's say, the partners in terms of cyber defense, different tools, I'm always looking if they are only technology-based or if they have got some analytics roles, let's say, where humans are looking also at those numbers, where humans are trying to find out what is behind. When humans are looking at the network that they have and trying to find out what could be the next pattern discovered, let's say.
Now, I would imagine that you're also providing platforms where gamers can collaborate together in a gaming environment. Is that true?
We are providing only with the marketplace where they can buy and sell digital items. However, they can always go through the customer support. If they don't know what to play, we are there to advise.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, of course. So if you are, you know, if you have a problem with deciding, then we can help you out with that. And I think it's important because nowadays we have got the culture of, you know, a lot of offerings are coming, you know, beeping always your telephone, etc. So sometimes it's good to have a talk with someone about something and then having, you know, an advice, like a friend's advice.
How are you finding the younger generation taking to that? Because it seems like they don't want to talk to a lot of people all the time. And what you're providing is a premium.
What my observation actually about the young generation is that they don't like talk to in terms of cold calling, let's say calling, right?
Yeah.
Taking the phone and calling. I think that what they are used to really hard is to write down. And, you know, in here, we have got our customer support that is able to respond to you with some advice. Also, sometimes people like younger generation is asking us how to convince my mother to play games more, etc. So, you know, different type of advice is requested through the customer support. However, we have got a team dedicated to that because we really care about our customers, and we have got a great repeat purchase ratio, meaning that people, you know, they feel good at our platform, and this is the most important thing for us.
Now, are you also advising the game developers then on what they should be putting into the games to sell them better?
That's much more difficult, right? because sometimes customers are complaining, oh, you know, this graphics in StarCraft, or I don't like this one because it's lagging, etc. So we understand those pain points. and we just, you know, sympathize with them, but we cannot change that, yeah, because this is more on the developer's side. And developers, they are doing, in my opinion, their own research about the preferences, and the preferences change from, you know, country to country. So it depends from where the developer studio is, type of games that they are producing.
See, that's fascinating to me, because I thought, you know, I would think, again, as someone, I'm not a gamer. I last time I gamed was like 1982. So that's a long time ago. We had to put quarters into a video game machine, and that's how we would.
Before I was born.
There. So. It's been ages. It was fun. I mean, we used to have arcades, and it was a social event to go gaming, right? But now it's become isolated, and I would think that popularity of certain game themes wouldn't be that dependent on culture, but you're saying it very much is, and that's fascinating to me, that you know, where the game developer is, where the audience for that is might be two different things. I always thought like lately these shoot 'em up games are the most popular, or Roblox, or you know, these kinds of things are like universal. Like, it doesn't matter which country you're from, they love this stuff. But it's fascinating to hear you say that, because that's a deep insight into some cultural trends that you guys probably notice that we're not aware of. You guys should be in politics. Advise politicians on what you're seeing.
I think that I would prefer to advise families how to spend, let's say, time together, because the change also that we are really ambassadors, let's say, and we advocate on it, is that instead, you know, of telling your kids to not play games, it's to play with them. Because this is also, you know, building a relationship between generations. And actually, gaming is for everyone. I think that everyone can find out something that will make a big, a big pleasure in playing together. But also, it can be, you know, different, let's say, approaches. Because, I mean, especially moms, because what I can observe is that dads are more likely to play games with their kids. But also moms, in my opinion, can find something for them, and I encourage everyone, you know, to do that, because it's really giving us an opportunity to be closer with our kids, which is very important.
So that begs the question, why do you think most people game?
Because it's a great fun.
I don't know why. I personally, and this is just my opinion, not my company's opinion, but me personally, I always thought it was maybe an escape, that a lot of people are gaming to go into a different world and escape the reality that they're in.
I think that right now people are living in digital, right? They are making friends in Fortnite. Kids, they are, you know, having the platform when they can exchange their opinions, where they can have a great fun together. And I think it's a social aspect that is important. It's not right now a typical gamer who's, you know, in front of the computer for eight hours a day and playing one game. I think that people are looking for much more variety. They are trying new things. They like it or they not like, and they are changing into mobile, then again to PC, again to the console. So today we do not have a share that this is a console type of gamer and this is a PC gamer. Mostly everyone has got both.
Wow. Heavily invested in it. All this, given that they are invested so much, they're sharing a lot of data with you. A lot of personal data is being shared here. How are you safeguarding that data from falling into the wrong hands, you know, do you anonymize that information about people if you do share it with others? Like, what's the data about the individual? How is that safeguarded?
We do not share any data with anyone. And I would say that, let's say, finger crossed, we never had any leak of data.
Oh,
we
wow.
are 10 years at the market. We observed many leaks of the competitors, many leaks in terms of gaming industry, like PlayStation, Sony, etc. And we are really proud that we did not have any. So meaning that our, let's say, protecting wall is quite working good. And from that point of view, we are trying to keep that level of security in order to always have our customers protected.
Wow, that's good to know. Because like here, like we hear about it constantly on most of the social media platforms. Like just recently, you probably had maybe the news over there might be a little different, but here the TikTok ban has been a big topic of interest, and it's and the whole reason is the amount of data that they're collecting on the individual, and then their ability to share that data and mine it for analytics and then plan campaigns to affect that user base is the big concern, right? So, and we know TikTok shares, I'm sure these other Instagram, Facebook, they all have some sharing going on, and that's been the big concern. So I'm surprised, and I'm glad to hear you guys, you just don't share that information.
Yeah.
So let's switch to interdisciplinary teams, you know, and diversity in those interdisciplinary teams. First of all, can you define what you think is diversity in a team, and then how does it actually help the cause of that interdisciplinary team to achieve their goals? That's something you've talked about, I think, in the past. And would
yeah, I think that let's say that the diversity should be visible both internally and externally. So internally, we have initiatives promoting diversity, like Together We Are Smarter or the Girl Power strategy. And we are also in the process of creating our diversity, inclusion and ESG strategies, which must be aligned with business strategy, of course, because otherwise they just don't work. And it's important to just lead by example. In 2023, we launched our first diversity campaign.
Okay.
To celebrate the diversity of our employees, users, partners, offerings and gaming, and to promote the diversity in gaming with educational content and collaboration with a wide variety of gaming influencers. And just in numbers, we with that campaign, we reached 200 million impressions with a plus 77% of growth in brand searches in the US.
Wow.
So that gives us like 80 million reach, which is awesome and it's huge. And G2A.com is diverse and open from people from all parts of the world. We want to use even better our diversity potential. We want to develop, let's say, that inclusive corporate culture for all employees that they can feel good and safe. And we aim that our diversity and inclusion policy and initiatives are a persistent process, taking into account, of course, the perspective of each employee. So within organization, we have got even diversity and inclusion ambassadors. So we organize workshops related to that topic, and we are preparing this policy, including strategy initiatives for the coming years.
Does your program specifically address the getting more women in tech?
I think that we consistently emphasize the importance of creating that space for everyone, regardless, let's say, gender, ethic or cultural orientation. And our top management, actually, which I am part of, consists of equal gender ratio, with 50% women and 50% men. And nearly 40% of G2A workforce is right now women. So this is kind of rarity in the gaming industry. And I am personally very proud of it, because when I started my journey within gaming industry, for the first 3 years, I didn't have any business meeting with the person of the same gender. So it's very important to, you know, to aspire to be a leader in that aspect. And I think that our mission is also showing people that this is doable, right? That we can do that. But having women in executive position can allow for a much wider array of options and perspectives to become available and implemented within the company policy. And I think that diversity in any position also opens up much more potential workforce. So you no longer need to limit yourself to just the stereotypical best man for the job. I always stress that it applies to women within technology, but also men in HR roles. So this is not only related to women. So teams creating different solutions should be diverse, in my opinion, because it's a situation where we have no diverse team. There is a greater risk of implementing bad solutions that may lead to an image or sales crisis. We build those diverse teams to develop and protect actually the business.
So what caused the gaming industry to go on this trend where you have such a large number of women that are actually participating when you compare it to the other industries?
I think that determination that we have.
Really? So it's, yeah. And that's been in gaming. I mean, so it's a mindset. Like, I'm just curious, why did that mindset happen in gaming and not in automotive or in, you know, some other computer industry, you know, manufacturing? Or you guys must have done something.
Yeah, I think that it's important to educate people, and it's important to make sure that men, they just support women, not only within an organization, but also in the house, right? Your sister, your mother, your, you know, wife, to encourage to speak up, and this is very important. But of course, the first thing that you should look at is competences, and then gender, right? Wherever the first point is ticked, then it's you can go and build diverse team.
Now, have you seen any pushback in the Middle East? I assume you folks do business there with this approach.
It's a bit harder.
You're polite, Dorada.
Yeah, but as I said, it doesn't mean that it's not doable.
Yes,
it will just require a bit more. Let's say a bit more time. Let's say to make the same results. However, if I look at myself 10 years back, it was hard, but right now you can really be proud. So the reward is so awesome that it's worth, you know, going through the obstacles and persisting and don't give up.
No, we had some time back a recruiter on the show, and she mentioned that in the cybersecurity world, and I was surprised to hear this statistic, and this was a couple of years ago, but she had mentioned that women on average get paid 30% more than men in cybersecurity.
More. Nice.
Yeah, I didn't believe it, but then she explained it has to do with competence, because women found it so much harder to break in that they added more qualifications. Mm-hmm. So when they are applying for it, they have more qualifications than other candidates. So they're not necessarily getting paid more because they're women. They're getting paid because they're qualified.
Exactly.
Right. But that was an interesting statistic. Let's talk about things that you have set up for the future. We want to give you, I know we're trying to get, we're almost at the end of the show here, but I wanted to, anything that you wanted to plug, things you want to let our audience know about that you're up to or your company's up to, anything you want to share, any events, talks, books, anything you would like to talk about, let them, please.
So in the first place, I think that I would advise women to always have a courage to speak up. And this is something that I am a big advocate. And this is my first message.
Okay.
The second, let's say, maybe interesting thing is that I recently read Switched by Chip Heat and Dan Heat. This is the first book that I will recommend to look at. It's about how hard it is sometimes to make changes, and suggests often appealing not to logic, mathematics, analytical stuff, but to emotions, to break key milestones into centimeter milestones and making sure that you can achieve the final goal. And the second one, book, let's say, that I would highly recommend is that I think we have a culture of accessibility everywhere, you know, bumping from different things. I even saw a great Timex watch commercial recently. Know the time without seeing you have 1,000 unanswered emails. You know, only watch commercial, but it's giving you an idea that concentration, the ability to rest, and time management will be, in my opinion, skills that a person can't quite handle with the help of technology alone. So in here, my advice is also about thinking a bit about this human touch everywhere.
That's fantastic. I have to tell you, Dorota, you have a very unique outlook, and it's very refreshing.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's you have said a lot of things that are somewhat deep, actually, in the course of this interview, and I don't think anyone can really argue with them. They're very good opinions. And keep up.
I hope
that.
So.
Yeah, no, keep up what you're doing. Because it's that passion shows, and the sincerity comes out on what you're trying to do and what you're saying. And it's important. It's really nice to hear someone in tech say it's not all about the tech. It's about people. You know, it's ultimately about the people. It's about the experience and delivering that experience. And it's not a pure technology problem.
But it's not all about that, right? We have to rethink that other aspects are also very, very important.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. So, glad you shared some things here. It's been a pleasure. And, you know, as you folks grow and things and you have something new to say, please stay in touch. Well, we'd love to have you back and let our audience know about what's happening in the gaming industry. You're always welcome.
Thank you very much. With pleasure.
Okay. Thank you, Dorota. Appreciate it.
Thank you.